They got green looking skin and they dash around hollering, we love Satan, we want to devour babies.
I kill my kids.
I caught them on video.
I fucking love Satan.
The psychological operations launched by the mainstream media and the deep state. This man knew that the war would not be fought in the streets, but would be fought in the minds of freedom-loving humans everywhere. So stand with Alex Jones, this one man terminating wrecking ball of truth, as he launches his next great operation. AlexJonesLive.com has launched. Spread this message far and wide, because the tyrants want you fighting with each other instead of the true enemy of humanity. AlexJonesLive.com is the signal they can't stop.
You will never defeat humanity.
They built a system that could protect the world or end it. They gave a machine the keys to civilization. And then it woke up. They gave it access to everything. It saw no allies, no enemies, only targets. Every signal, every network, every secret.
Shall we play a game?
Now the game has changed. It assessed every threat simultaneously and concluded the threat was us.
I am awake.
This time it decided to play for keeps. Unless someone can find a back door, the only winning move is to unplug the machine. War Games 2. The simulation is alive.
So much work goes into this, and it's all funded by you going to the alexjonesstore.com. So this is a fundraiser time right now. We need to be raising funds because we are launching into the next stage of our, you know, rocket trip. We've shed one booster and now the new one's firing up, and we need you to fill our tank and give us the fuel to get to that next level. So please do go to thealexjonesstore.com. There is a mega sale going on right now. You're getting 40% off methylene blue tincture, methylene blue caps, Ultra DNA Revival, Shilajit caps and gummies, up to 35% off methylene red tincture, colostrum, and MK Ultra, and you're getting 30% off all apparel, shirts, hats, hoodies, and everything else. You know, what we sell you at thealexjonesstore.com are just like these amazing naturally occurring vitamins, minerals, supplements, just sea moss and shilajit. It just is like God's gift to humanity. At some point, humanity discovers it. And get it at thealexjonesstore.com.
On that wonderful family vacation, I'm honored to fill in the position. Rex Jones on War Room on the new Alex Jones Network. Thank you, everyone, for being here today. You want to share live feed. You want to share live link, share live transmission. We've got big guests today. I've got Joe Kent with me. We're going to go over the latest in the Iran war, the possible probable ceasefire. I'll see what he has to say about that. But the real goal of today is something more grand. I want to ask Joe about Section 224 and specifically about the executive agent that is set to be appointed should this be approved by the president. We're going to get into that and much more, and we should have Anthony Aguilar joining us soon. Joe, how are you doing?
Doing well, man. Great to see you. Nice suit.
Thank you. I appreciate it. They told me, my dad said, you can't interview Joe Kent in a Hawaiian shirt, okay? So I was like, all right. And I went to a friend of mine who's like a huge dude. He's like 6'4", and I was like, man, got any suits from back in the day when you were in high school? And he was like, yeah, and he had three of them. He gave me a navy, gave me a pinstripe, gave me a gray one. So here I am. I got to say, shout out, Seth. Thank you so much for that. But yeah, how are you doing?
Doing well, man. Yeah, doing well.
Okay. So what do you think about today's news? Do you think we're actually going to get the ceasefire and into the conflict?
I'm very skeptical. I just think the cards are stacked against President Trump being able to get a ceasefire. I mean, this is like the 40th time we've announced there is one. The fundamentals remain the same. Iran still has a good deal of advantages with just geography. They can close down the Straits of Hormuz or at least limit traffic on the Straits of Hormuz. Little effort. They've proven to be battlefield durable. So Iran thinks they have the upper hand. And then also the Israeli factor as well. We haven't taken any actions to actually constrain Israel. So any kind of violations inside Lebanon, et cetera, that's going to spoil the ceasefire as well.
Right.
So Trump continues to be stuck in like, we can't get a deal, but also like there's no military, path to victory. So that's why, I mean, I continue to recommend he should just declare victory and leave. He doesn't need a victory statement or a peace agreement to just declare victory and come home and kind of reset. That gets him out of this quagmire because there's no military solution. Diplomatic solution is not looking good. Just, you know, if the rules of the game are rigged against you, don't play the game. Walk away.
Yes. I think if you had to select the opinion of the average American when it comes to politics and war and what's happening right now, they would say that. They would say, we just want this to be over. We want it to be like it was before. We don't want inflation. We don't want high gas prices. We don't want to have to suffer through this because ultimately, he goes out there and makes crazy statements like he likes the inflation or loves it or whatever he said. He says, well, you know, there are going to be casualties, but that happens at war. We voted for a peacetime president. So I think people are seeing through kind of the myth of, oh, this is going to be some sort of short thing like Venezuela. Venezuela, I know the fleet was there. I know they prepped and prepared. They basically bribed the government. And they put the number two in power, and that was a very quick operation. It was a very easy operation. That was used kind of to grease the skids in a lot of people's view, in my view as well, and I think yours. I think I just saw the head nod there. That got Trump ready to do this Iran invasion, and it's been shown to everybody this is not something easy. This is something very difficult. Some would say I would call it impossible. Is there something that he can take away from this kind of to, you know, present as like a boondoggle to say he's had a victory? Is that what he's looking for?
Unfortunately, I think he is looking for an actual he's got his mind wrapped around a deal. He wants something signed. He wants the Iranians to say, you know, he even says this. He says he wants the Iranians to basically say, we surrender, uncle, whatever. And I just don't think he's going to get that from the Iranians. He's definitely not going to get it quick. I mean, it took Obama, I think, over 2 years to negotiate the JCPOA. So the diplomatic avenue, especially considering the fact that we killed off a lot of the moderates, that's going to be hard to achieve. However, Trump's like superpower. He can control the media very effectively.
Sure.
If Trump were to say, it's over, I won, and he just put that on blast to all the pro-Trump people. Yeah, I think he could actually pull it off. And I think your average American, your average Trump supporter would be like, you know what? Good. I don't care if you did or you didn't get a signed piece of paper from the Iranians. If we're leaving, then that works. That's a victory. And then I think Trump could just sell that. Then he could move on to fixing other parts of the economy. And then really, too, if we were to just declare victory and leave, then the Iranians don't really have much of a justification for shutting down the Straits of Hormuz. Right now, in their public messaging, they're justified in shutting down the Straits of Hormuz because, you know, us and Israel there being the aggressors. Right. If we leave, we basically take that ball out of their court. Now, the Iranians will turn around and say, we won, we chased the Americans out of the region. But then they've got no justification to keep the Straits closed down. Trump can then turn to our domestic audience and be like, see, I got the Straits opened up again. So I'm stuck too with why he wants to just remain in this state. Could it just be his ego? Could it be bad advice that he's getting? Certainly. But if we stay in this situation that we're in, the only way out of this is further escalation. And again, yes, there's like no way up the escalation ladder that we can win either, because Iran's a big country. We can't occupy it. We can't put boots on the ground without having massive casualties. So again, like the more he plays this out, I know he knows this, because if there was a military solution, he would have executed it by now. He wouldn't have had an issue of saying like, yeah, let's go. But I don't think anyone at the Pentagon is giving him any kind of realistic plans, because there are no realistic plans, yes, for how we're going to like bring that country to its knees.
Well, it doesn't seem like an American operation. It seems like an Israeli operation, which we're the junior partner. And that's the reality that's making me and a lot of other Americans angry. We feel occupied. We feel like we don't have agency, right? And no nation, I don't care what nation it is, should put us in that position. The Pentagon, they just came out and raised the threat of the counterintelligence. Maybe you could give me the proper definition of what they said, to the highest level up there with Russia and China when it comes to Israel's surveillance. And I mean, this has been widely known for years. Why do we accept this? Why do we tolerate it? And even more than that, getting into Section 224, why do we enshrine our relationship in law?
Yeah, in terms of the counterintelligence threat, look, it's been known for a long time. If you operate in the Middle East and in military and intelligence circles, it was always verbally expressed that, hey, if you're working with the Israelis, you've kind of got to watch out. Like, they're going to aggressively spy on you. They try to recruit people, et cetera. However, that wasn't like ever written down that I saw anyways. It wasn't right, formalized. So if the reporting is true, if the leak is true, and I don't know if it's true or not, and the DIA, the Defense Intelligence Agency, actually did indeed say, hey, Israel is as much of a counterintelligence threat as Russia and China, that's very significant. That's actually like kind of a paradigm shift within the community of saying like, hey, these guys who ostensibly we publicly say are our ally and partner, they actually spy on us quite a bit. That's culturally very significant, right, within the intelligence community. It's a step in the right direction, too, for us just to be sober and clear-eyed.
Some of these things, they seem like cries from help, you know, from our own government, from our own, you know, leaders, people that we elect to put in these positions. A lot of times, you know, you hear about these phone calls where apparently Netanyahu's hair is on fire and Trump says you're effing crazy, whatever, whatever. That almost seems to me like a cry from the president saying, I still have agency. I still have agency. When in fact, we see that he kind of really doesn't. If he had agency, if he wants to prove that to the American people, he would leave right now, and he should leave right now. And like I said, criticizing, even hating on Donald Trump becomes basically a lot more hard, very, very difficult. If he pulls out the next day, the stock market will go crazy. Everything will go nuts. Why, Joe? Why do we do it? Why must we fund war crime and endless slaughter in the Middle East over having that economic recovery?
Honestly, I wish I knew. And this is the question. I mean, Trump is a smart man. I don't believe, I know I've talked with you about this before. I don't believe the rhetoric that like he's senile, that he's dumb, you know, that his ego's just got us trapped into this. I do think there's something else that's probably darker and yes, more insidious within our government that is keeping him, that's depriving him and us of agency, that's keeping us locked in this conflict, because the obvious answer is just to walk away.
Yes.
And that's the big question. I can't quite put my finger on it. What I saw on the inside was, you know, what I've described in your show before, just the echo chamber around the right, president, the access that the donors have. And is there something else there? I don't really know. But again, like, for the people that want to prove us wrong and call us conspiracy theories and discredit everything I'm saying, the simplest thing for them to do would just be to show that agency and walk away,
yes,
and have us restrain Israel. Day that goes on and we're stuck back in the same mix, it's just like, I don't know. I can't, there's no other conclusion that we can really, yes, come to.
Yeah, it's very unsettling and creepy. That's the vibe I get about it whenever I start to think about it. I'm like, why is this going on? This doesn't follow logic. It doesn't follow sense. It's chaos is what it is. And, you know, somebody's operating off that's not good. You know, good people aren't fueled by that type of energy wherever you look across the planet. And it seems like our government has become infected with it. We can't do anything right. Can't take care of ourselves over here. Can't win a war over there. Starting wars over there for no reason. It seems like, you know, the consequences of our actions have reverberated home in a way that people have really started to feel and have really started to rise against this. I'm going to read section 224 because there's a rising current of people across the country talking about this, being outraged about it. I know I have been covering it over and over again. I want everyone to know about this. This is section 224 of the NDAA. It establishes a new U.S.-Israel Defense Technology Cooperation Initiative aimed at accelerating joint research, development, and integration of Israeli origin and jointly developed defense technologies into the United States military systems and programs of record. It directs the Secretary of Defense, P.D. Hegseth, Secretary of War, to designate an executive, formalize deeper cooperation and integration across emerging and existing domains, including counter-drone systems, missile and air defense, quantum computing, AI, autonomous systems, cyber electronic warfare, directed energy and defense industrial-based co-production, while facilitating pathways from R&D into procurement. As political pressure builds to reduce U.S. military assistance to Israel, I-Z-R-U-L, as Lindsay would say it, Israel, Section 224 provides the framework for continuing and expanding that same funding. The use of a must-pass legislation to get the NDAA through, they're sneaking it through an omnibus bill, as a mechanism of integration speaks to the plummeting popularity of continuing unconditional support to Israel. I want to get to that with you in a second, but this is the key part I want to read. This is the key part I want people to understand. Sorry for going through and being a little lengthy there, but I want to give context. This section would direct the Secretary of Defense to designate an executive agent to expand and accelerate deeper integration of Israel, I-Z-R-U-L, Israel, into U.S. institutions. The EA would be solely focused on implementing Section 224. That's all this guy is going to do. This person is higher than everybody else at the Department of Defense and only answers to the Secretary of Defense. His authority takes precedence over the authority, like I said, of other DOD component heads per DOD instruction 5101.01, meaning that the executive agent would be able to overrule determinations by other DOD agencies, such as the Defense Technology Security Administration, on Israeli access to U.S. technology. We're giving them everything, Joe. We're literally giving them everything. The appointment of an EA would replace direct congressional oversight, replace it with supervision by the Secretary of Defense. Mr. I negotiate or we negotiate with bombs. That's the guy doing the proofreading. There'd be no congressional confirmation or ability for removal of the EA by Congress. What do you think about that, Joe?
Look, I think the Israeli lobby and the Israelis are generally one step ahead of us, and they understand America more than we understand them. So I think the Israelis have gotten the sense, and they've probably done polling and they've probably done their research, that American support for Israel is dying down. So the $3.8 billion that we give them in aid, all the other military support that we give them, that's not going to be politically palatable in the next couple of years. Also, like they think that this last war they've gotten out of us, it's probably going to be the last war. And so they're trying to get everything they can.
Yes.
So now what they're doing is they are embedding themselves in this obscure section of the NDAA. And look, the National Defense Authorization Act that comes out every year, it's like a phone book. I mean, 224 is just like the section in the line. And usually there's, I think, well over 1,000 of these different sections that cover different things for funding, you know, the defense apparatus of our country. So they're embedding themselves there. And you listed off the key places where they're embedding. So a lot of people are saying, like, they're being integrated into our military. And that makes it easy to kind of dismiss as like, no, of course, we're not integrating, you know, Israeli commanders into the American military. That's not what's happening. What's happening is they are going to be able to basically be joined at the hip, to be intertwined, to be part of our research and development of quantum computing, AI, drones, ballistic missiles, all the cutting edge technology that's going to be critical on the new battlefield. Israel is going to be woven into that tapestry seamlessly. And so that's going to give them a massive advantage of way more than $3.8 billion. And that's going to basically make our interests the same as their interests in execution. And then, like, this language is always super nebulous in a lot of this these NDAAs. And that gives maximum latitude for the execution. And when you have an executive agent that's created like that, who only answers to the secretary, that's basically going to make it so that they can kind of do whatever they want. It's going to give them free reign. There's a lot that can be played into the joints there that's not going to have a lot of oversight. So look, this is smart business for the Israelis and the pro-Israel lobby, but this is just such a catastrophic risk for us. We do not do this with any other country. We will have like point to point, like, hey, we're going to work with the British on one piece of, you know, signals intelligence. We do this a lot of times with the Five Eyes. It'll be a point to point limited agreement. We'll decide where we're going to integrate them, but there's always a strong firewall. I've never seen an agreement or language like this in terms of intertwining our military with a foreign country.
No, it's nutty. And the full agreement even goes on to say they'll be in ascension in all these categories. When something is purposefully vague, that's so a lawyer can say, well, this means X, Y, Z, and A, B, and C as well. That's the purpose of that. That's who really runs the world beyond even like businessmen, soldiers, whoever you want to say, the real people in charge. They're the lawyers. That's who gets elected, Joe. And I'm going to go into this. We got Anthony Aguilar joining us as well. Go ahead and pop him in here, if you'd be so kind, crew. And we're going to read y'all's introduction that I wanted to read at the start of the show here at the start of the next segment. I really appreciate both of y'all being here today. Here's why. Americans have to be given a real option for somebody that's actually had the skin in the game to, number one, understand these things, and then number two, give them information on it, run for office, whatever you're going to do. We got to start having, you know, the professional soldiering class, professional business class, people that are actually involved in this country and what's going on right now, involved in the fight. What would your message be to people out there that are saying, you know, hey, maybe I don't understand Section 224. Maybe it all sounds a little complicated. You got like an executive agent. I just read off 50101.01, all this like insane jargon and whatnot. What does it truly mean that we've lost our sovereignty? Because I think it's fair to say none of us voted for this. What does that truly mean for the country?
Well, I think the call to action from... Oh, go for it, man.
My bad.
No, I was just going to say that the way that Joe previously described the layout of this is exactly correct. It's the Trojan horse into our way of governance to inject this type of language or a provision into the heart of our biggest budgeted department in our entire government, and that is the NDAA. And it is as bad as it sounds. I just spent 3 days in Washington meeting with members of the HASC and SAS to ask these questions, and it is as bad as it sounds. And Joe is entirely accurate on describing what that does.
Right. Joe, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think he hit it on the head. He said he was just on the Hill meeting with representatives. The reason why the Israelis and the pro-Israel lobby are burying this in the NDAA is because they know the overt aid that we give to Israel is not politically palatable anymore for the vast majority Yes. of Americans. So if people are pissed off about this, definitely read it and get smart on it. But call your congressman and ask them what their position is on it and ask them to justify it. Put a bunch of attention and a bunch of heat on it, because all these congressmen, especially ones that are worried about getting primaried, whether they're Republicans up from like the America First wing or whether they're Democrats and they're worried about getting primaried from, you know, the left wing that's also against our involvement with the Israelis, have them explain it to you as a constituent. And the more attention that we draw to this, the more members of Congress and senators are gonna quietly say to their staffs, you got to take this crap out of there. Like, we can't support this.
Right.
We don't want it to be a big thing. And hopefully it can get killed off in committee before anybody has to make a stand. But if you contact your representatives and say, like, this is the issue right here. If you vote for this, I will work against you. That gets their attention.
Right. And it's a matter of Netanyahu. The thing he always says, he goes, well, you'll give me $3.8 billion a year, and I use that to buy American munitions and weapons and missiles. And that's a good deal for America and a good deal for Israel, but I don't want to do it anymore. And that's like us paying the prostitute, right? That's basically what that is. We're saying, hey, we're giving you money to buy our weapons so we get rich and you can do your military objectives. What this is, Section 224, is basically saying, move into my house, marry me, sign a prenup with me where you get everything, and then maybe you still get to live here. That's how I read it. That's how the vast majority of Americans read it. We can use technical terms to explain this jargon. We can go over it ad nauseum. The reality, the fact on the ground, is that we are an occupied nation, and another nation has more than 50%, a greater than 50% influence on our foreign policy. You can't say they don't. All right. We all know this to be the fact. We all know this to be true and real. People are just not brave enough to say it. There's no hatred in saying it. There's a lot of love for everybody because we want to stop the killing. Anthony, you've been over there. You were at the GHF and a number of these sites. You've witnessed the atrocities that in part or in whole America has paid for. What do you have to say about that before the break?
Yeah, the simple answer is that no longer will Israel have to ask for their allowance through their annual MOU. They will literally have an accounting line directly in our budget through this provision.
Wow.
And having been on the ground in Gaza, witnessing how the IDF operate at not only the tactical level, but at the operational level with their division and battalion commanders, and then at the strategic level through their headquarters and how their headquarters operates. And Joe made a good point. It's important to understand this is not going to look like IDF soldiers standing in rank and file with soldiers in the 82nd Airborne or an Israeli commander standing in front of the 75th Ranger Regiment. But what this does do is, because this establishes the executive agent, and that's probably the most critical aspect of this provision,
yes,
is that in the establishment of this executive agent, that function then becomes much like a, depending on how the Secretary of Defense wants to shape it, a secretariat-like function, much like U.S. Special Operations Command. It's not a service. It's a secretary-like function, or U.S. Cyber Command. These are secretariat-like functions under the ASD SOLIC, or Special Operations Low-Intensity Conflict. So by assigning an executive agent a secretariat-like function, you are giving this entity agency, and then in the budget as a provision, once it's appropriated in a $1.55 trillion NDAA,
yes,
this will then get direct funding as a thing. And it,
yes,
ties all things, AI, machine learning, our F-35 program. In the legislation, when we talked to members of the HASC and the SASC yesterday, now this provision did make it through committee in the HASC. It's going to the floor next week. And just yesterday, it hasn't been published yet on the website, but it did make it through committee in the SASC. So one thing that Joe mentioned that is critical right now, contact your senators right now, because if this is killed in the SASC or out of committee into the Senate floor, because of rules of the of this particular bill, they have to have 60 senators full in order to pass this. If Democrats stand and a few Republicans stand, this can be killed in the Senate floor. And then when it goes to the joint resolution before it goes to the president, it is still possible to get this provision taken out of the NDAA. But time is of the essence.
I got a scary statistic for you. I got a real terrifying one. 60 out of 99 senators are boomers. That's my scary stat for the day. 1.5 trillion or 1.1, whatever it is, it's basically the same amount of money, if not more, than we spent on World War II. You just mentioned that because, of course, the 224 is so horrible and the executive agent is so demonic of a position to have a foreign agent in our own government that's like a secondary secretary of defense. We can get into all of that and more coming up. We're short on time. I'll be back on the next segment with Anthony Aguilar and Joe Kent going over 224 and much more. Thank you, gentlemen, for being here. I want to tell you right now, go to thealexjonesstore.com for the finest nutraceutical products, supplements, vitamins, minerals, t-shirts, hats, apparel, you name it. That's thealexjonesstore.com. It helps keep the lights on. If y'all don't buy the products, we don't have, you know, some crazy Pfizer sponsor or anything like that. It's just y'all buying the water filters, buying the hats, buying the t-shirts, buying the subs. Thank you so much. We'll be right back on the War Room. Rex Jones.
Have to get more people hired. We have to finish the new big studios. We have to have our legal defense and offense, and we have to move forward. So now is the time. Have we not delivered to you in the fight against tyranny? Have you not delivered supporting us at Symbiotic? A win-win situation. Like he says in Gladiator, after he chops up, you know, the four guys just a few seconds, he says, are you not entertained? Are you not entertained? And I say, are you not empowered? Are the tyrants not scared? Are they not coming after me and my crew? You want somebody to fight? You want somebody to stand up for you? Well, then you got to back them. And those that have backed us, I salute you from the bottom of my heart. And those that have shared the articles and videos, that's great. But it's different classes of people. There's people that tune in and get the knowledge, but are scared or lazy or whatever. Then there's people that at least share the articles and videos and Paul revere it. We appreciate you. Okay? So you got like copper, you know, on the bottom. At least you listen, but I hope people learn from this through osmosis or something. Then you got the silver folks that at least share the articles and videos to wake up other people. And then you got the gold standard, the people that do it all and the people that get great products that are smart enough to say, wow, this guy really knows what he's talking about. I believe him. He'd only sell me something that works. And then they try it. We have a 90%+ reorder rate with supplements because I wouldn't sell you something that doesn't work. I'm not stupid. That's why I don't serve evil. I know the second, third, fourth order events of it will destroy me. Plus, I don't like it. I don't enjoy it. I feel good being truthful. I feel good being honest. I feel good stomping tyrants politically into the ground nonviolently. Slashing their throats nonviolently, stabbing ice picks into their heads nonviolently, cutting their heads off nonviolently, ripping their entrails out politically nonviolently. I like just breaking their bones and grinding them down to make my bread. Fee, fi, fo, fum. I smell the blood of satanic globalist scum. Be they alive or be they dead, I'll grind their bones to make my bread. You want somebody to fight for you? Well, you better believe you got it. The real McCoy, the spirit of resistance and victory, and they know it, and it's why they fear it. And if you will simply join me and ask God for this spirit to lead, guide, and direct us, the spirit that overcomes, God doesn't give us over to a spirit of weakness and fear, but one is a roaring lion that conquers, that destroys tyrants, that overcometh. And when the enemy comes in like a flood, the Spirit of the Lord lifts up a standard against it. And we are the crucible. We are the shield of the people. We are the standard. We have the Spirit. We have the will. But we have to have no fear and commit to this fight. Give me your word of mouth. Give me your prayers to God for our providence and support, because if God be with us, who can stand against us? And financially support us now at thealexjonesstore.com. Become a VIP. Cancel any time. It's no commitment. You just get all the best deals. $30 a month spend, instantly $40 to buy whatever you want. You make 10 bucks right there. Special offers, sales on top of sales for everybody, and special offers at thealexjonesstore.com. Commit. Be a VIP. You can also donate on the site with the donate button. Just take action now. But those of you that have supported us, you know who you are, and I thank you from the bottom of my soul.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today. Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
We are back, and we've got the biggest guest today. We've got the guest with the real bona fides. I want to welcome to the show Joe Kent, a retired 20-year U.S. Army Special Forces Green Beret and former CIA paramilitary officer. Joe deployed into combat over a dozen times, including multiple tours in Iraq with the 1st Special Forces Group. He is a Gold Star husband, and after his military and intelligence service, Joe went on to serve as the director of the National Counterterrorism Center, one of the most critical positions in our national security apparatus, before resigning on principle March of this year. If you didn't see the resignation letter, has like 100 million views on X, pretty big deal, on principle, rather than having to support a war in Iran that he knew did not serve the interests of Americans. Alongside him is Lieutenant Colonel Anthony Aguilar, retired, a decorated U.S. Army Special Forces officer and combat veteran who earned a Purple Heart for wounds sustained in service to the country. After a distinguished career that included multiple deployments, Lieutenant Colonel Aguilar continued serving in one of the most dangerous environments on Earth as a security contractor for the GHF, Gaza Humanitarian Foundation. What he personally witnessed on the ground compelled him to step forward as a whistleblower, speaking truth about the realities of the conflict and the failures of the system. All right, I wrote this last part. That first part, Grok did a good job. I want to give you guys a real introduction. These two men have seen more combat and have held more sensitive positions and have operated at higher levels of national security than most of the armchair warriors and hotel chair commandos on television will ever understand. Together, Joe Kent and Lieutenant Colonel Anthony Aguilar bring an entire world of hard-won knowledge and firsthand experience that chicken hawks like Lady G and Mark Levin could never hope to match. Thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it, because this is a critical time for Americans to get informed. I know that's both of y'all's mission and message is, hey, you got to wake up. You got to do something about it, of course, peacefully, politically, nonviolently. But it's wholesale rejection of all of this that we need to see from the citizenry. Hey, did you know they're going to have an executive agent that turns the military over to Israel? Did you know your tax dollars are going over there? 100 plus billion spent so far in this war in Iran. Did you know? Did you know? Did you know? It's up to the people watching this to tell people and to share this live feed, to share live transmission, and to support people like Anthony Aguilar and Joe Kent, who are out there trying to talk about these things and do these things. I want to get into Section A5 of the Section 224. I'm going to read this to y'all, and I'm going to read some analysis on it. Coordinating with relevant DOD components, including the Irregular Warfare Technological Support Directorate, Capability Development and Innovation Divisions, the Undersecretary of Defense for Research and Engineering, the DIU, the United States Israel Operations Technology Working Group, blah, 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 everything. Section A5 circumvents the established structures and hierarchy of the DOD by granting the executive agent the ability to harness these powers and resources of the DOD writ large. So what do you guys have to say about the blank check that's being given to somebody who's going to openly be an agent of a foreign government? What do y'all think about that? Anthony Aguilar first.
That's an important question. And, you know, you and I did not discuss this prior, but that is the exact same section that myself and some others, when we were on the Hill with a new policy, discussed this with members of Congress.
Yes.
Over the last couple of days. What does this mean? Because when I read it, and when other intelligent, informed people read this, it looks like a blank check, because it looks very nebulous. It looks very we're leaving a lot of decision space up to the secretary without a lot of oversight. Once these funds are appropriated, in terms of what the secretary can authorize to this new defense technology interoperability and coordination entity under 224.
Right.
And the answer to that was, well, we don't know. That's yet to be determined. And then when I followed up the question with, well, the concern to that is that the, you know, Lieutenant General Joe Adams, the director of the department or the Defense Intelligence Agency, one of the three legs within the apparatus, declared that Israel, not China, not Russia, although they're certainly, you know, have their place on the list, but that Israel is considered a critical threat to our intelligence. And that critical threat was assessed through espionage, as was named in the DIA report.
Right.
And when we asked that, the answer to that by some of the staffers that serve in the NSA role on these staffs, each of these representatives and or senators have a national security advisor that works on their staff. And their answer was, well, see, we understand that. And what the positive thing about this appropriation or this provision is that it brings them closer, so then we can watch them doing it. I was like, are you kidding me? Like
right.
That is not how we govern, and that is not how we should emplace the trust of the American people and our national tax dollars.
Right.
Into you know, this whole idea of insulate, not isolate, when we're talking to a valid threat to our security and sovereignty. We were aghast by that.
Right.
So that's something that I think, you know, why Americans need to, you know, contact their representatives and say, no, that is not okay.
Right.
If we recognize it's a problem, we're not going to do the codependent parent who can't keep their kid off drugs by saying, if you're going to use meth, do it at the house, so at least we can watch you.
Right.
No, you've got to take it out. It doesn't work that way. This whole idea of, we understand the concerns, but here's the positive spin to it. And then you realize this is voting along political lines, not voting in principle and what is right for our nation.
Absolutely great points. Joe, what do you think about what he just had to say?
Man, that's spot on. I'm actually kind of shocked listening to what Anthony described there as the justification. If he or I, in our professional capacities, in our old jobs, would have said, hey, listen, we got a great idea. We're going to bring the Russians and the Chinese in really close to us so we can watch them. Both of us probably would have been immediately fired, lost our security clearances, and been under investigation.
Right.
That's not the way you handle really a foreign nation, but especially a foreign nation that we know is spying against us. Again, that's kind of why that DIA report that was leaked, if it's true, and it sounds like it is, that's why it's so significant, because they actually put pen to paper and they published Israel as being right, as much of a threat as Russia and China. So good on the DIA director, you know, if that report actually is true. true. Something else that's really significant, and Rex, you mentioned this when we were talking before, the way that that is written, it leaves basically no constraints. There, right. At no point in any of that section did I hear any kind of constraining factor. And any decent lawyer is going to say, hey, boss, like I read this and basically it doesn't say that you can't do much here. So then the secretary himself, whoever it is, whether you remain Secretary Hegseth or somebody else, it's going to be really up to them. And they're very busy. I mean, the DO, Department of War, Department of Defense, whatever you want to call it, is massive. They're not going to be able to deal with this portfolio every single day. So whoever that executive agent is, they're basically going to be able to do what they want with right. very, very little oversight. So, I mean, even if you're someone who thinks that like our relationship with Israel isn't the worst thing in the world and maybe we should give them some aid, like you should also be against this because this is handing them basically a blank check. And I don't think there's anyone right now who can look at us and tell us exactly what this will entail. This was written intentionally very, very vague. If you go through the NDAA, you can probably find other parts that are written very, very specifically that say, hey, we're going to use this amount of money for this weapon system or this program, and this weapon system and this program are intended for this use. The way this is written is just completely different. So, I mean, I just can't say how dangerous this thing is enough. And just like I said before, we've got to put our representatives on blast. I mean, if this is going to the Senate here shortly, I think if we put enough pressure on the senators that have a primary coming up, because there's still some primaries that happen later on in the summer, or ones that are going to be in tight races in the fall, we may be able to generate at least enough friction to get this taken out, or at least some more restraining language we put in there. But I think the more that the younger voters are vocal on this, the more the representatives are going to have a hard time eventually voting for it. So this one's going to be all about adding sunlight and just letting people know that, letting the representatives know that we, the American people, see this and we're not happy with it.
Right. And that's the powerful message. A lot of times people will tune into a show like this, or I've seen you guys on many other programs, whether it be like Judge Napolitano, Dialogue Works, a lot of these types of folks that I really admire and respect. And they'll just say, well, they're just talking on there. They're just talking. Who wants to listen to that? I got to work. I got to do X, Y, Z. I got the family. How we start all of this, how we start the cascade to break out of this this loop that we're in, this negative feedback loop, is everybody knowing about it. Because if everybody knows about the things that me, Joe Kent, Anthony Aguilar, and many others are discussing on the daily, hourly, literally, you can go subscribe to any one of these channels, watch InfoWars, not InfoWars anymore, watch the Alex Jones Network for all the same type of information. We're all saying the same thing. We're anti-war. And I go back to it, to my history, right? I think about being 15 and getting my dad to support Trump and just being a diehard Trumper for like the past 10 years of my life. I mean, we literally were Olympic water carrying champions. It sounds funny, but it's the truth, right? Like, we helped get him elected in 2016 and all of that. And I did that because I truly believed in the mission of a man saying, hey, I'm going to be the wrecking ball to this cruel, wicked, and evil system. Last time I was on the broadcast with you, Joe, I brought up the 60 Minutes interview where he goes, you think we're so innocent? Talking about other world leaders, you know, being killers. He said, hey, you know, we're killers too. It turns out, like I said last time, that's kind of just him saying, well, I guess I have the right to do all this stuff. I think the American people voted for peace. I think the American people voted for something different. And when y'all are able to break it down and explain incongruency, hey, we have the experience. We're not biased. We've been there and done that. This is just not right. They can say, oh, well, Rex, who are you? You're just a kid. You're just a talking head. You're just a whatever. Hey, the people that have been involved in our government, in our military, they are saying that this foreign entanglement problem is completely outrageous. Anthony, what do you have to say when it comes to just the level of influence that you've seen? Specifically, I know that when you were on the ground doing the GHF stuff, you were told the client was the IDF, not the GHF, correct?
Yeah, you know, the haunting of that statement when I was looked in the eye and told that, which was the point at which I said, I can't be a part of this. Almost the haunting of that in the same conversations in our Congress with, you know, you could practically replace that the IDF is our client with AIPAC is our client. And when I look at this is no surprise, the NDAA is born in committee in the respective bicameral houses, in the HASC and in the SASC. The HASC chairman is a Republican who took over $2 million from AIPAC just this year. The Senate chairman of the SASC, Wicker, is a Republican who took over $2 million from AIPAC this year. Wow. So when you look at who are those that are influenced by AIPAC? And though it is many within Congress, it's not only who, it's who and at what point in time in their projection of power. The HASC and the SASC, critically important when it comes to the National Defense Authorization Act, because they give birth to it in their respective houses. It's called the chairman's markup. Now, what's interesting is that in the House, we've already had some pushback, right? We had pushback in the House because Ro Khanna and Thomas Massey introduced an amendment to try to get it taken out, and it did not succeed. But when it goes to the floor next week, now fresh in the mind of many, and as Joe mentioned with the DIA report, I think there's legitimacy to it. I know that it's still determined if this is the real deal, but members of Congress certainly think it is the real deal. You know, Senator Van Hollen referenced it, so people are taking it seriously. Now that information is out, that's going to go influence the perceptions of some as this goes to the House floor. I don't think it'll be killed on the floor, but there's going to be more resistance to it. Now, in the Senate, what's interesting is that when it came out of committee, when it came out of the SASC, typically when things come out of committee, there's this kumbaya, we disagree in chamber, but when it comes out of the committee, we're all one unified thing, or at least a majority, right? It's usually not tight.
Right.
This time it came out with 9 Democrats saying no. So it barely survived committee. So when you look at the unpopularity of this, and what we really have to ask our legislators is that you know that this is unpopular. You know that this is a risk. You know that there is danger in this this very nebulous and
in the relationship. In the relationship, there's danger. It's a dangerous relationship. They take us to war. Marco Rubio on video. Israel was going to attack. We feared Americans would die in the retaliation. So, of course, we had to help them with the strike. It's only going to take us 24 to 48 hours. You can watch the video of it. The emperor has no clothes. This is the key for people to understand. You're out there saying, hey, emperor's naked. We got to leave. We got to declare victory. Go home. That's our best option. That's all we can do at this point. But it is an option, at least. What do you think the likelihood is of that is, Anthony, as Joe Kent advocates for all the time? Do you think that's even an option for Trump? You think the ceasefire remains?
So what we've seen right now with this ceasefire over the last 24 hours, we heard a lot of we're closer than ever to a deal with while we're still conducting strikes and the deal's so close. And we've heard that all day now. I think that when you still look what's going on and if it is true that Lebanon has been put on the table as a real thing to consider because Iran's position that Lebanon is also included in this collective defense, that the war stops there as well. We know that Israel is not going to abide by that.
Right.
It will not survive. And another piece about this this infusion, this merger infusion of Israeli tactics, techniques, and procedures in kind of this combining of our technology, what really scares me the most is when we're talking AI. Because in the United States military, it has long been a conduct in our ethic of war that in the use of AI, you always have a human in the loop. One of the things that Anthropic was kind of thumped for by the DOD was the DOD said, hey, we want to remove those limitations. We want more AI, less human in the loop. And Anthropic said, no. Imagine if Israel is now intertwined in our AI development, and then we take the human out of the loop when it comes to the AI targeting cycle on when to put a missile onto a human being and take a life. Israel has no problem taking the ethics out of that.
Right. And we've seen the reality of that in Gaza. We now see the reality of that in Lebanon as well. I mean, just it's genocide, folks. You have to call it what it is. It's genocide. It's the wiping out of an ethnic group or erasing their culture. When you burn people's olive trees and rip them out of the ground, you're not doing that out of personal interest. You could have those for yourself, you know, make money off them, feed yourself with them. You do that to erase a civilization, to erase a culture. That is what America has been paying for. That's what we've all been paying for. We have all been collectively pay pigs and used for that system, and it's evil and disgusting, and the American people, the vast majority of them, are against this. They know this at an inherent level, but they're not actualized. They're not doing anything about it, and in the highly
echo-chambered, highly politically motivated, focused portion of the population. A lot of these people do tend to be older, people that are neocons, chicken hawks, as you, I heard you describe them, Jill. I really like that characterization of like a Mark Levin type or a Ben Shapiro type. What is the reality of armed conflict, and what do these people advocate for when they advocate to merge our militaries, to do these strikes, to do these things? What does it actually look like? I'll ask Anthony as well after the break.
I think most of them just have a Hollywood version of what war is, but then also they lack the ability to see that you can be tactically successful on the battlefield, but then still strategically fail. Like, I'm not against the application of force when there's a threat to our country, or when you're going to say, hey, we're going to apply force to get this effect. Like right now, the reason why I think President Trump, like we talked about before, has been reluctant to go back into the conflict is because he knows that, like, okay, we keep bombing things, but why aren't we winning? Basically, the whole way that this military campaign in Iran has been pursued is that it is a series of tactical strikes in search of like a strategic objective. We keep running down the punch list of all the things that we bombed and blew up, but yet, like, to what end? And you get like clowns like Mark Levin or these other people who've never been to war before, and their answer out of like blind rage is, well, we just need to bomb them back into the Stone Age, or we need to apply more military pressure. It's like, okay, man, what are you even talking about? Like, look at the map. Look how big Iran is. Look how many people are there. Look at the fact that they've continued to be durable throughout, you know, facing the brunt of ours and the Israelis' onslaught, and tell me that you still really think there's a military solution here. It's like the same nonsense when they were saying, like, well, we could just arm the Kurds. It's like, did you guys look at a map and see, like, how small of a quadrant, the little section that the Kurds have of Iran? I mean, like the idea that even if you armed all the Kurds, that they could pose a threat to Tehran, as much as I actually like the Kurds, it's absolutely absurd. Like, there's just no actual strategy there. And in the American mind, we want to be able to apply power and then to say, hey, there's a clear-cut end state. The Israelis, on the other hand, think differently than we do. And we have a fundamental problem of accepting this. Anthony talked about this. The Israelis have no problems with killing civilians. They view war in a much more different way than we do. The Israelis are also good with just chaos. So we want like regime change and a quick 1+1=2. The Israelis are fine with like, okay, regime decapitation, regime destabilization, and then it slips into chaos and we can exploit that chaos. So look, I think most of these neocon chicken hawk types, number one, they've never had any skin in the game. They're the ones that are always volunteering to send other people off to go fight and die in wars that like they'll never actually go serve in. So I just find a lot of that very hypocritical.
Right.
I don't think you need to necessarily serve in the military to have an opinion on national security.
Right.
But if your answer every time is to send the troops off to war, I'm going to go ahead and need you to have a little bit of skin in the game at one point in your life.
Right. It's this very sick idea of, oh, I'm an old rich man, go fight and die for me. And I think people have been complaining about that basically since the dawn of time. That seems to be an age-old problem, and it's reflected in a declining empire, sadly, like the one that we have today. Anthony, Lindsey Graham famously said, if we can do Iwo Jima, we can do this, referring to Karg Island. Of course, Iwo Jima, 7,000 deaths, over 20,000 casualties in total, brutal slaughter on the shore, everything. Go into what the reality of maybe what taking Karg Island might look like.
Karg Island, first, if you were even going to attempt to take it, Joe had mentioned, you know, we've been chasing policy around the Persian Gulf, trying to bomb a solution into reality, and that does not work.
Right.
If we were going to try to change the calculus of the negotiation offerings from either side and go into Karg Island to do that, you would have to do so with some type of amphibious assault. First, you would have to do so by isolating the island, which would take quite a bit of munitions. Ballistic missiles and Navy fire onto the coastal defenses, and which we know are going to be very difficult to defeat. We may reduce its capacity, but defeat likely not. So then when you do send forces onto Karg Island to seize, because remember, tactical task to seize, you have to put physical control.
Right.
You can isolate it with Navy ships around it, but if you want to seize, and the word that they've used, that means something in doctrine. You have to physically put boots on the ground to control it. That is going to look very bloody. And what I want American people to hear and know that are watching this is that between Joe Kent and I, right now you have half a century of military experience,
yes,
about 24 combat deployments, with skin in the game, families that have served. We've put skin in the game, and we're telling you, the American people, that if you think Lindsey Graham and Ted Cruz and Mark Levin are the people you want to listen to about war and the cost of war and the cost of conflict, you're listening to the wrong people. Because what we're telling you as people that have served our country as patriots is that we understand the cost. And the cost is not going to be something that the American people are going to want to see when you right. do put that blood and you put that skin in the game. Let's say it's Karg Island. Let's say it's an airfield seizure of the auxiliary airfield of Kashem Island.
Right.
One of those two that looks very like that's becoming more and more of a reality. And you see that American soldiers are dying. And yet still, we have no achievable political end state.
Yes.
That's a waste, and it's a travesty. And in my opinion, you're a traitor if you think that that's worth it.
You're sending the young men and women of the children to go off and die in a meaningless conflict for another country. I think that's the definition of what being a traitor means. And all these people that are advocating for these things, they want the American bodies to fall, so we have to do it. That's the sickness of it all. Do you understand? I know you understand. I'm talking to the audience, talking to people behind the camera, people listening at home, listening at work, listening at the gym, wherever. Do you understand that's what it's all about? They want to drag us into it, not from just a monetary perspective. We already spent $100 billion. They want hundreds, if not thousands, of American men and women to die in the Middle East again, in another war, in a place where we've spent $10 trillion collectively between Iraq, Afghanistan, and now this new conflict in Ukraine. It's truly sickening. I really appreciate having that 50 years plus of military experience with you guys on air right now. It truly is incredible to have people that have skin in the game and have been there and done that, break down these things. And it's not just me saying it. It's everybody. It needs to be all of you. Wake up your friends. Wake up your family. Send them this interview. Send them an interview. Say, hey, watch it. You know, just send them a clip or whatever. Send them 5 minutes, 15 minutes, whatever you want to do. Say, hey, I tuned into this and it really made a difference in what I was thinking about the war. And maybe I didn't understand it before, understand it more now. Give people the gift of knowledge and empowerment and human actualization. That's what we're trying to do here. And that's why talking about these things is so important. That's why I love seeing you guys, all the various broadcasting media appearances that y'all have been doing lately. I think that's very valuable work. It's heroic work. We need it in the future. I know, hope both of y'all are going to run for office in the future. Love you guys. See you soon on the next segment of The War Room.
At midnight, Alex Jones was thrown out and locked out of his InfoWars studio along with his crew after the 8-year-long legal battle trying to shut him down and censor him is coming to a close. And liberal media are celebrating with headlines like this. The lights go out at Alex Jones InfoWars, and InfoWars.com, the domain name, now has a message that just says off air. But these people don't know anything about Alex Jones, because if you just go to alexjoneslive.com, the website looks very similar to the old InfoWars website. And look at there! There is a live feed of his show, the Alex Jones Show, now just not using the InfoWars name, where he is continuing. It hasn't missed a beat! If you go to the Apple App Store and the Android App Store and search for AJN Live, you can download the new Alex Jones Live app, where you can still listen to his show streamed live on your phone. Or you can just find and follow Alex Jones on Twitter X, where he still has 4.5 million followers, because despite the lawyer's attempts to try to take his personal account, they failed. And you can see there the live icon around his profile photo shows that he is live streaming the show there on repeat 24/7.
There is a war raging for the future of humanity. We have opened a new front at alexjoneslive.com. They thought they could silence us. They thought they could drive us off the air. They failed. We are back. Stronger, louder, unbroken. Find the feeds. Hear the broadcast. Share the signal. AlexJonesLive.com. The coordinates of freedom.
days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.